everybody. This is going to be our first video episode of the Tasteless Podcast. So if you're listening on your phones and you want to see the video version, you can check us out on YouTube at the Tasteless Podcast. This was an interview I did with Paper Thin. If you guys have been following since the beginning, he was our first guest on. He's had a really interesting year covering PUBG on mobile and on PC, traveling around the world. We also talked about the state of WCS and Blizzard and StarCraft and StarCraft 2. I thought it was fitting to bring him back onto the show since we started with him with audio initially. Now we're going to start with him with video. I've also got an announcement to make. I will be going to Tokyo for Evo to interview players down there. Right now we don't have any StarCraft going on in this month. So since I've got some downtime and some, you know, got nothing else going on, I might as well fly out there and see what's going on down in Japan. So that's going to be a lot of fun. If you guys want to support what we're doing here at the Tasteless Podcast, you can go to patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. Making a show like this isn't free. We've also upgraded what we're giving away here. We're going to have a new tier for Patreon supporters. We have our own Discord, and we've got new Patreon goals, including a video episode with Artosis. And if we get high enough, some video episodes with Day 9, where we will fly him out to our studio. So if you can, please support us at patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. And without further ado, our first video episode with Paper Thin. All right. Thank you for doing this, man.
Of course.
You were my first guest in the very first podcast. It was audio only. So I thought it was only fitting to have you come in here on the video podcast.
Yeah.
This is a little bit under a year ago, right, when we last talked?
Yeah. It was April of 2019.
And so a lot's happened in PUBG. Can you kind of get us up to speed on everything that's going on right now?
Yeah, sure. So people who are into PUBG esports already probably know, but you know, and people on the periphery kind of probably don't exactly have a great idea of what's going on. It wasn't a great year for PUBG esports, to be frank. The league system they put into place didn't work out. So we had four like majors. They called them classics last year. And as I was talking to you about, I was doing the first one. It was called the Face It Global Summit. And then they have a league in between each classic to like qualify for these classics. And then, you know, the big end of the year event, which is the PUBG Global Championship. All of that leads up to that. The problem was that the leagues just weren't doing very well. It's just a lot of
weren't PUBG. Doing well as far as like viewership,
right.
or players
viewership.
Or okay.
Viewership. There's like a lot of really talented players across a bunch of different regions. I mean, right now, Europe, China, and Korea all have like really, really strong teams that could come in and compete for these championships. So it isn't a lack of players. There's plenty of talent. It's just a lot of PUBG, I think. At the end of the day, like, you're doing like the Europe League, for example, is doing 96 games of PUBG.
So when you're saying a league, you mean like there was a regular show that was going on, for instance, in Europe. I know that there was one in Korea. I got to cast that with you for a little bit.
Yeah.
On top of these major tournaments, the four that were coming out, right?
Right, exactly. It's very similar. It's a pro league system, right? There were PUBG official leagues, right? And there was one in Europe, one in America, one in Korea, one in China, one in Japan. There was an SEA one and a Latin America one. And somebody's going to get mad at me because I'm forgetting
one.
One
somewhere else.
But they were all over the world, right? Literally all over the world. And it's just a lot of PUBG. I mean, it's, you know, Korea played 48 games in a season. Like, there are three seasons, right? Or phases is what they called them. And it's just a lot. It's 3 days a week, for example, in Korea. 3 days a week, 4 games a day. And that takes about 3.5 hours. So it's pretty long. It's not, you know, super... It's not longer than like a normal sports game, for example, like an NBA game.
Yeah, a baseball game or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty comparable to that. But at the end of the day, it is a lot to take in. And where PUBG was finding success was in the bigger events, the global events. Like the PUBG Nations Cup was actually our biggest event. It was like a World Cup style thing where each region got to bring their four best players. Or 16 countries,
and
I should
how
say.
How long does that event last? Is that a few weeks, or is that just over a weekend?
That was 3 days, yeah. Over
three
a
days.
Weekend,
okay.
Basically.
Weekend event, basically.
Right. And so you're doing like 6 games a day, and that takes about 5 hours or so, 5 to 6 hours, depending on how much filler you're doing with like analyst desk and all that other stuff. So the PUBG Nation Cup, which was 16 different countries, got to bring their four best or voted on players, however they wanted to do it. And that was our most popular event, like, by far last year. And it was really, really cool, and it was really fun. It was here in Seoul. Korea, and I got to cast that too. You know, it was just a blast. I mean, people were loving it. The crowd was great here in Korea. Like, the fans were going nuts. I mean, it helps that one of the best players in the world is Korean, so that definitely hypes things up.
But. Yeah, I mean, they definitely tend to dominate anything they're playing in. You had this crazy year. You kind of went from like zero to hero. You've been traveling all over the world. You got to cast the global finals, final round. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
PUBG is still a really popular game, especially in Asia, but it's still big globally, like Europe and NA. But it seems like it's in a weird spot now. Like, we're here in 2020. From what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't appear that they're going to be doing the same kind of league format at all.
Right.
And there's been this exodus of the esports people that were in charge of PUBG.
Correct.
So, obviously, this is a weird position for you as someone who wants to cast PUBG and cover that as much as possible, whether it's, you know, in South Korea or anywhere in the world. So, what does this mean for PUBG going forward? Is this something people should be worried about, or is everything actually fine and it's just a change of scenery?
I think people should be a little worried. I'm a little worried. I think there's still plenty of potential for PUBG, and I think it's going to just take people to kind of like figure out what exactly the best model is going to be for how the esports is organized, because the league system just wasn't viable. It just wasn't going to work for PUBG. It's not like it doesn't have that tremendous amount of viewership support that something like League of Legends has that can just prop up a league system, because like League of Legends they have enough viewership, right, that their leagues can be pretty consistent and do well, whereas PUBG just didn't have that yet. So I think maybe there was just a little bit of a you want to model the best, right? You want to model League of Legends as where you want to take your esport, and I think that's what PUBG tried to do, and it just didn't work out. So now people are leaving. They're scaling back on the funding, and they're instead of like the leagues are just kind of allowed to kind of do whatever they want now in terms of like their format and everything. Like, there is no more like overarching like rule set. Like, we had a rule set for the whole system that is kind of gone. Most leagues are probably going to not change a lot, like at all, really, except for like some of them are going to have like open qualifiers and like online qualifiers and some things like that, so it's going to look different for that. But yeah, they're still going to be four major events again, but they're going to be bigger. So instead of like a short weekend event, they might span it out over a couple weeks and really give like these big tournaments like more time to kind of flesh themselves out, because a lot of the complaints from players when they come to these big events is they don't have enough games to really kind of balance things out, right? You play like 140 games of baseball in a year because there's some randomness, some variation, and you want to show over a course of time that you are the best. You know, in a you know, playoff format, it's a little different, right? You have that shorter period of time, and that's kind of what makes it exciting. But the players would like more time to kind of flesh things out.
It seemed like League built their way into that, right?
Yes.
League is 11 years old now. I mean, they didn't have a major tournament system right away. I mean, they were outsourcing that early on, because I know we were having League paired next to StarCraft at MLGs.
Right.
Like, way long ago. I wonder if they maybe dove in too quickly for a game that probably maybe needed more organic time to build as an esport. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think in general, like, I think people are finding when they're fans of PUBG, when like the big events are super exciting and super fun. And I think that's what really they want. That like, because like it kind of drags on. Like, these leagues, there's three big seasons of these leagues, and it's too much right now. Like, people aren't kind of fully invested in the esport yet, and that's a huge commitment to make as a fan, right? You only have so much time, right? Time is your most valuable commodity as a person, and you got to build this, you know, naturally, organically, whereas this system was just kind of like, and I totally 100% get what PUBG is doing and appreciate it, because they really, really tried to make this esport a thing. Like, they gave it a ton of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, and a ton of effort to try to make it happen. And, you know, it just didn't work out for various reasons. And I think a lot of people should be more appreciative of that. Like, if you're a fan of, like, I see a lot of players and fans of PUBG who are kind of very negative and very sour right now. And I think they should look back on 2019 and say, well, we tried and we gave it one hell of an effort.
Do you think they did it right, though? I mean, granted, yeah. I mean, they spent a lot of money. This is also typical of every every new game, when they're trying to dive into esports, they're dumping a lot of money. Do you feel like it was handled in the correct way? I mean, certainly there had to be some bloat somewhere in there, or some unnecessary spending, right?
Yeah, if you asked me at the time of our last podcast we did together,
yeah,
I would have said they're absolutely doing the right thing. I mean, in retrospect, yeah, it wasn't the right thing, but I was on board with it. I thought it was a good idea. I thought, like, all right, let's really give this a shot. Let's do this league format, and, like, let's see where this goes. But it's kind of feeling like it's going to be, and this is a lot of esports in general, the league formats just aren't viable. They're just not going to work.
Yeah.
There's only a few that can make it work, StarCraft being one of them, because of the way it has to go.
Well, the StarCraft League formats, I mean, it's kind of a very weird situation in that everybody that's good, for the most part, is in South Korea. They're either Korean or they're residing out here. So, like, doing GSL is actually, like, not that expensive, right? Like, a lot of these other leagues, they have to house the players in, like, a hotel for some time and then fly them out and have handlers for them.
And then think about that with PUBG.
Yeah.
That's 16 teams minimum.
Yeah,
64 players plus staff, you know, coaches, managers, all that other stuff. You got to provide them food. You got to provide them housing of some kind. Usually that's going to be a hotel. You got to basically book out an entire fucking hotel. And
yeah,
that's a ton of money. So the best, I think what PUBG has learned is, and I'm fully on board with this now, of course I say that, and is that the bigger events, that's where you just got to put all your it's more cost-effective to put all of your kind of eggs in these one baskets, because you're saving money over time, because you're paying hotels for 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, depending on which league you are in,
yeah,
for 64 players. That's insane.
Well, this is a problem with team games in general, is that everything costs way more. Everything is much, much harder to do. Fighting games, RTS games, anything that's one-on-one, it's much more self-sustainable. I mean, the StarCraft model... StarCraft 1 or StarCraft 2 out here in Korea, it's so much cheaper. It's so much more doable. Like, we don't even pay for the players to come to the venue. I mean, they take the train or take a taxi or something like that. So you think if they switch to, like, a four major event format,
right,
which is actually pretty typical for a lot of games, is there some kind of major event somewhere. Four usually seems to be the number.
Yeah.
Make it seasonal. And then and put them in there. Do you think that can rejuvenate the PUBG scene? Because... And this is, at least from my perspective, because StarCraft had this a lot early on at the start of it, was market confusion, where there was too many fucking events everywhere. Like, right when StarCraft 2 came out and it was all over the place, there were, you know, sometimes three major tournaments in a weekend. If you're going to follow PUBG and you don't know where you're supposed to go or who you're supposed to watch, it can be hard to actually keep up as a fan.
Yeah. I hope it's better. This also opens the doors for kind of what you're talking about, the possibility of other organizations running their own PUBG events. There's no restriction anymore that it has to be, like, PUBG funded and PUBG controlled. PUBG is getting very hands off with this. Kind of when I was listening to your podcast with Moses, the CSGO caster,
yeah,
it's kind of more similar, going to be a little more similar to that now, where PUBG is getting very hands off and they're letting these other organizations say, if you want to run your own tournament with whatever rules, that's great. Go ahead. And we're going to see that here. Actually, there's an event coming up. By the time your viewers hear it, it'll be already happened. But it's called the Smash Cup. It's going to be actually a joint venture between OGN and Afrika TV. It's just like a 4-day little tournament, but it has a unique rule set that's going to be different than the normal style. So you're going to see some of these events crop up, and it gives, I think, some room for creativity to try and find what's going to work. And I think this is what worked for PUBG esports in the beginning, when PUBG didn't even have an esports department or anything like that. People were just making their own events and they were getting really popular and they were, you know, profitable. And then, you know, I mean, PUBG, of course, said, okay, well, this is our esport, we should do something with
right.
this. And they really did try. I mean, it's not like they just walked into it and tried to smash it. They were trying to prop it up and make it even bigger, and it just wasn't successful. So now they're, you know, kind of retooling things and rethinking things. So I think it's got a chance. I mean, of course I want it to succeed because I love PUBG and I love doing it. I think people, like, as time goes on, we'll learn that there's a way to watch PUBG And you, because you need to, this is kind of funny to say, but you kind of have to have two monitors. Like, you have to have one monitor for the main screen and one with the map. Because you need to know what's going on. And you can watch your own teams. Like, most tournaments now will let you watch a particular team's feed. So you can watch your favorite team if you just want to watch them and see what they're doing. So maybe even three monitors would be good. But it is, but most people have two monitors these days, right?
Yeah.
So it's very watchable, but it is. You need to be invested in it when you're watching it, because you can't really not pay attention, because, like, the moment you stop paying attention, all of a sudden, like, two teams are dead, and you're like, oh, what happened? I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people were very they were definitely questioning, is this possible to spectate at all? Honestly, I was one of them. Personally, I thought, okay, there's so much going on here. I found it's actually pretty fun to watch PUBG.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot going on. It seems like it's probably the hardest game to produce for.
Oh,
especially in game, it's totally crazy, but it does seem like it's actually, as far as, because there's a lot of esports that I honestly have a hard time watching. This seems to be more of one of the more watchable ones.
I think it's, you know, it's really funny. Like, I've shown this game to a lot of different friends and family who aren't into esports.
Maybe this is because it's based in reality.
Yeah,
as well. Like, it's actually guns and abandoned cars and houses, and there's no.
It's easy to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And once you explain the basic concept, well, there's 16 teams, they can all drop anywhere on this map, and then there's a circle that forces them together, and they have to fight over territory. Bam. People are like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And they watch it. I mean, my parents came to the PUBG Global Championship, which was super cool of them, and they got to, you know, listen to me cast, like, my voice over the stadium and stuff, so that was pretty special. And my dad, like, he was like, oh, I get it. He's like, I understand why this is a thing. He's like, this is actually really cool once you kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah, it definitely seems to translate pretty well just into like, the basic viewer. Is it possible for there to be a league system that would come into place later? It seems like not just PUBG Corp, but a lot of these companies tend to jump the gun. I think we're seeing a little bit of this with Overwatch. We're going to see exactly what the future of that game is. But it's almost like they're trying to force a whole format upon everybody out of nothing. And maybe that's part of the problem. Do you feel like this is almost a reset point, or is this like a new format they should try to follow going forward?
Yeah, I think it's a reset. I think if in the future it continues to be successful, and let's say, you know, who knows, someday, and you nerds out there, don't take what I'm saying seriously. PUBG 2 comes out, right? I think that'll probably happen. It has to. It will happen. You heard it here.
Half-Life 3 and PUBG 2.
Half-Life 3.
It's announced right here.
No, I'm not trying to, like, leak anything. I actually have no idea. I've never heard any rumors of that sort.
I actually figured they were probably going to have a PUBG 2.
There has
or
to.
Something. There has to be something like that.
It's still a pretty janky game at times. We did have one moment during the World Championship where there used to be this bug in the game where cars would just kind of take off and fly
up
in the air.
They just flip off the level.
Go into space. We had that happen at the Global Championship. One of the NA teams, they were driving into a building, and this is one of these weird physics glitches that happens, and it doesn't happen very much anymore in PUBG. To be completely fair, they basically eradicated this bug, except for very weird circumstances. And a guy drove into the side of a house and just hit it at a funny angle, and the car just right up into the air. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, but the player fortunately took it in good nature. We started calling him Rocket Man. Was the nickname we gave him.
Just to say on that note here for a second with PUBG 2, because this is actually happening. Fortnite 2, right? Did they announce Fortnite 2?
Is it?
Ryan, can you check this? I know that there's Overwatch 2, which appears like almost to be DLC. Like, it's not actually a new game, but it's like a campaign or something that they're releasing.
It's a single player thing, I think. Or like a co-op. It's a co-op thing, I think.
Co-op thing?
Okay. I think.
But is it Fortnite 2? Is there something for that?
Fortnite Chapter 2.
Okay, Fortnite Chapter 2.
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe they could do a PUBG 2. I would imagine, though, if they had to do a second PUBG game, it would need to be in a new engine, though.
That's what I'm hoping.
Doesn't it seem like...
I would prefer
I'm not a programmer, but it seems to me that the engine is so janky that...
Yeah,
it's preventative for competition.
It was built by a very small team of people, right? Brendan Green
is the Unreal engine, right?
Yeah, I think it's Unreal. I think it's Unreal 4. If I'm not mistaken.
You should check that.
Double check that.
For the fake news out there.
People are going to be like, Clinton doesn't know anything. I'm like, I know. So, Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, I would like to see them just, as long as they keep the gunplay mechanics, like that's what makes PUBG special, right? Is how hard it is to control those guns. That's what makes it really fun.
Yeah, the guns are not like lasers, right? I mean, you actually, yes.
Unreal Engine 4.
Okay. Yeah, you were saying, you know, using the gun control or having, like, I guess recoil control.
Yeah.
Or the fact that when you fire a bullet, it actually has to go through the air and then eventually
there's bullet drop and a trajectory and all that other kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's what makes it super fun. Like, when you see players that are able to recoil, you know, control the recoil so well that they can keep a point, like, with a gun with a full, you know, automatic spray.
Yeah.
And they can keep it almost pinpoint. Like, that's so hard to do. Like, you watch them as they move their hand across and they're doing this, like, across the mouse and, like, they have huge mouse pads for PUBG because you need so much room to move your mouse around to control the recoil. So in terms of like technical skill, it's one of the hardest games out there. And that's why it's frankly, a lot of people find it kind of frustrating because it's hard.
Yeah, it's very different from Fortnite. And I'm not saying that Fortnite's easy because I feel like it's almost, even though I think aesthetically it can look like it's the same game, but this one's more, I guess, more like white and green and, you know, more colorful stuff. And PUBG's, I think, more of a gritty looking game. There are a lot of differences in that. Do you feel like PUBG and Fortnite are in direct competition with each other? Is there a similarity to like the League of Legends Dota rivalry here?
I think there is.
I think some people might even disagree that there is necessarily a rivalry with Dota and League of Legends, but sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think there has to be. I think all the Battle Royales are kind of competing with each other, including Apex Legends, to kind of keep a player base. And now there's all kinds of different Battle Royales coming out. I mean, there was like Realm Royale, which was like a third person, almost like World of Warcraft looking kind of, you had like spells and stuff. And there's one coming out. I can't remember the name of it, but you're like, it's like a battle royale with mages. You're like a mage and you have to like cast spells and
it's
like
mage royale.
Yeah. It's nuts. It's so like, there's all these different battle royales coming out and I think they are kind of all in competition with each other. Just like CSGO and Call of Duty and Rainbow Six Siege are all kind of in competition with each other. There's only, you know, as a fan or something, you've only got, unless you're like really rich or just, you know, a shut-in in your house, you only have so much time to watch
both.
Esports or
yeah.
both. Yeah. And so like, you have to kind of pick and choose like your favorite type of game and which one of those. So yeah, there is definitely some competition. But that being said, Fortnite and PUBG are extremely different games and both great in their own way. Like Fortnite is hard because of the building aspect.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around that stuff sometimes where I watch it and I'm like, what are they thinking? Like, how do they that quickly like design a structure in their head? I mean, obviously it's practice.
It's insane. No, it's crazy. And it's very, very different because the bullets, I'd say, are much cleaner in Fortnite, but it's much less about just being a shooter as it is trying to manipulate an environment and navigate that. But Fortnite, from everything that I understand, is not actually massively, it's not huge globally.
No.
The way that
just
that
in the
PUBG,
Western world.
This is a misconception. I mean, a lot of people that are watching this are probably Americans or some Europeans, and so there's a big problem with people in gaming in general where they project what their experience is in their game onto the entire world, where China alone and PUBG, it's not just that there's a lot of people in China, like PUBG's fucking massive.
It's huge in
China. In Korea, it's still huge in the PC cafes. You go into a PC cafe, I'd say maybe like a third of everybody is playing PUBG, maybe a fourth.
Yeah, it's going
on
down.
A bad
Overwatch
day.
Did take like the number two spot again. So it's League of Legends number one. Overwatch has been number two again. And PUBG went down to number three. But yeah, it's still quite popular in the PC cafes. You'll still see people playing it. And it's huge here in Asia. People have to, that's where people have to kind of go, well, okay, you look at like the concurrent players, we're still like on Steam alone, hundreds of thousands, and not many games can have that claim where there's that many concurrent player pretty much all the time. And that's just on Steam. And a lot of these countries don't use Steam. China doesn't use Steam. Korea doesn't use Steam, right? All these other countries have their own launchers for PUBG. You know, here in Korea, it's Kakao. I don't know what they use in China, but it's,
I don't know.
I think some Steam, but there's other launchers as well.
Yeah, I think Steam is trying to pitch something to China where it's like their Chinese Steam, but it's very limited in the games. I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, everybody uses different launchers, basically.
Right, right. So people have to kind of take that as it is. Because Fortnite, nobody plays it here in Asia. It is not
People don't
thing.
Even know about it out here.
No.
Yeah.
They tried to. You remember they had that, like,
that
Chris Pratt.
That fucking Chris Pratt commercial just made me want to kill myself. It's like Chris Pratt talking shit to Koreans in this commercial about a game they don't play.
Did you see
it's
the
like,
one?
It's like a guy... in India on an American commercial talking shit on Americans because they suck at cricket. We're like, we don't even fucking play that game.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, they had a pretty cringy attempt to try to penetrate the Korean market. It didn't...
Did you see the one where it was, like, Chris Pratt's, like, mouth over a door and it was, like, a Fortnite thing?
No,
oh, my God.
Really?
This got so crazy, like...
It wasn't a bad pick to pick Chris Pratt. I feel like everybody likes Chris Pratt, but... I don't know. There's something about if you don't play Fortnite and seeing people do Fortnite dances that just...
Oh, it's so... Every time I see somebody start flossing, I'm like, no.
Yeah, there was somebody in the marketing campaign at Epic that just really thought that was like... it's just not cool. But yeah, that hasn't really taken off, at least in Asia. As far as I understand, I mean, people can tweet at me if I'm wrong with the data, but as far as I understand, it's not taken off at all. Are they... Since these games do compete against each other, are they doing something right that PUBG Corp is not?
Fortnite had a couple things going for it from the get-go. A, it is pretty cartoony, and so that really engaged a younger audience, so they have a strong support coming from that. And I think that's something that's just, hard with PUBG, because it's a much more realistic-looking game, and there's blood, and... You know, it's not like it's graphic. It's not like Mortal Kombat graphic, but it's like
Mortal Kombat's banned in half the countries out there. They don't give a fuck either. They keep putting those fatalities out there. But this is a problem in general with shooting games. It's actually something I meant to ask Moses here, but the fact that these are games where people acquire realistic, like actual guns. Well, they're not actual guns, but guns that you could buy in real life, and they're killing each other with it, or especially in Counter-Strike, where it's terrorist versus counter-terrorist, which, as each year passes, is more of a real...
Right. That's kind of like a political thing almost, right?
Yeah. That can be problematic. I know especially because the Olympics has been flirting with the idea of using various esports. It looks like they have something worked out with Street Fighter because the Olympics are going to be in Tokyo up here. Yeah.
Oh, there.
I think we wanted it to be StarCraft, but if it was in Japan, they probably got to...
Yeah,
then first.
It'd be a little
weird. We did some stuff in PyeongChang.
Right, I remember that.
For the IOC.
Scarlett won that.
Yeah, won that one. And it was, they were saying it was a good model because it's not, there's nothing controversial about aliens fighting.
It's a chess game, basically. For like a modern chess type thing.
Yeah, it's one of the advantages about StarCraft, fortunately, is that it's not a violent game that would bother people.
No, it's really...
There would be issues with getting sponsors or putting it on TV.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kind of is beautiful about StarCraft. That's another game that's also easy to understand. Like, when you just kind of look at it, you kind of get it. You kind of are like, okay, there's these armies, and okay, these guys have, like, swords on their arms, and they're gonna go run at the other guy and try to hit him, and okay, that's a tank. Everybody knows what a tank is.
Yeah, you just see one army kill another one, and you go, okay, I think I know who won.
Yeah, exactly. So, you've got some changes coming up for StarCraft this year, right? Like... I was just thinking about this because I wanted to pick your brain on this. I actually haven't seen you much since I got back to Korea because
I don't think anybody's seen me, man. I haven't had any work in like 2 months. So I more than that. Let's see. I finished.
I saw you for like New Year's, and then like I haven't really seen
and
you
then
much.
I went to Thailand, hung out there for a little bit. And,
I've been casting a ton on Twitch. That's the real.
Yeah, there's that too. I have one cast tomorrow, so that'll by the time this is out, that will have already happened. That'll be my first cast back, and then. GSL has not been announced, but you know that'll get sorted out shortly here. And then there's been a shift where Blizzard is no longer running WCS the same way it is. It's going to be moved over to ESL. I think is it called ESL Pro Tour, right?
I
think there was still some debate if they're going to keep it called WCS or not. But I think by the time this is out, we'll probably have a better idea. But I mean, it's kind of weird for us here because you know there was this massive firing at Blizzard,
right?
And I kind of heard in advance there might be some people laid off, and that's not abnormal.
Yeah,
in any big company to have layoffs, there's always some degree of bloat. But I didn't expect it to be all the esports people. That was the big shock, and a lot of the people they fired at Blizzard, or maybe didn't re-up their contract, whatever fancy way you want to say it, were the people that I thought were very important. So that was pretty shocking.
Right.
And since then, a lot of the other people that were involved have actually also quit. So it's like all the people that were there at Blizzard that were in charge of keeping the game around and micromanaging it, making important decisions, they're all gone. And instead, things have moved over to, I think, more of like a free market environment.
Sure.
This is kind of similar to what you were just talking.
We're in very similar situations in a way.
So, I mean, Blizzard's relationship with StarCraft is really complicated because, and I think a lot of people that just followed StarCraft 2 might not be familiar with this, but you know, when they put StarCraft 1 on TV out here in Korea, and it did very well almost immediately, they didn't ask for Blizzard's permission and didn't give Blizzard any control.
Right, when it was Caspa?
It was Caspa, right. And Blizzard wanted to have some control, and they were like, no, we're going to kind of push you out of the picture. So this was about 22 years ago, maybe about 21 years ago, actually. And so since then, this has sort of been like Blizzard's white whale, is we want to get back in and get control of this because nothing's ever quite been as big as StarCraft 1 in Korea.
Oh, it's nuts.
I mean, League obviously is huge, but like right when this happened, this is crazy.
Hundreds of thousands of people would come to a single event.
Yes. It was massive. And so I think this is one of the reasons why they made StarCraft 2 to begin with, is they needed to get their own IP and then have control over it. And that's why you see a lot of features like you can't play on LAN, because they want to have some control over their game. Or they don't want people to be able to run a tournament. They want to have the power to, for instance, shut that down. It's also okay. For other reasons, like to make sure there's no bugs happening anywhere and to get proper statistics so that they know what's happening in their game.
But then, my question to you is, because you asked me this, is that, do you think that was a good idea by Blizzard in the long run? Was that the right decision?
Well, so they wanted to, first of all, they were elbowed out of the way in StarCraft 1, right? And I think even the WTO was involved, I think, for a little bit there.
Oh, God, yeah.
There was a lot of fighting. And, you know, the Korean pro teams, they had major Korean companies like Samsung SKT and other companies were actually just frankly bigger than Blizzard that were able to kind of take better control of the situation because they each sponsored a team. So Blizzard came in here expecting with StarCraft 2 to A, dominate, and then B, to kind of push this into the global realm, because Korea, especially at that time, was super insular and not very good at promoting outside of their own borders. But when they made StarCraft 2, it's not like CSGO, right? CSGO is just an attempted improvement upon Counter-Strike,
right?
Source, which was an attempted improvement on Counter-Strike 1.6. So while they got all this control, then they wanted to run everything. So that's where you end up with stuff like WCS. Initially, when the game came out, everybody was every little company was in charge of different little tournaments, and they started to overlap. This is why I was mentioning or asking you earlier if that was causing market confusion, stuff like that. And so Blizzard wanted to have that streamlined. The problem is, A, it takes a lot of people and a lot of money to do that. And it seems like at the end, whether this was purely Blizzard's decision or more of Activision's pressure over Blizzard, because those companies are merged together and Activision has more control than right. Blizzard does in that sense. It seems like they don't want to micromanage everything.
I think this is the trend in esports.
But, yeah, but they still want to have, the licensing, and they don't want to fully let go and have people just do whatever they want. And so it going to ESL, I think it's in good hands there. A lot of people forget that everybody that worked at ESL and DreamHack basically came from two games. They came from StarCraft or Counter-Strike or maybe Quake.
So it's kind of like they own a theater, and you can rent out the theater for various events or whatever you want to do. And they still have the theater. They could still say, okay, you have to do it this way. We're going to do these things.
I think I'm going to have a better idea when I get to the events, because then I kind of see what's happening. Like in the past, there would be a production company, and then there'd be sort of like, I don't, minders is probably not the right word, but there'd be Blizzard people there that would say, okay, we want the logo to be brighter here, or we need to have a part.
Oh yeah,
or that, I don't know. Maybe it references this other product. I don't know. It's all kind of complicated when you see it go down. And then we'll produce the show and put it on. But ESL is going to be in charge of it, and I think they have to try to profit off of it. So they're going to be more motivated to try to do this. Also, you know, one problem at Blizzard is that everybody was getting moved into Overwatch.
Right.
People keep getting pushed into that because there's this mammoth project that is so big it's not allowed to fail, I think, as far as the company is concerned.
It can't.
It can't.
It's too huge. There's so much money in it.
There's so much money, and so we're going to see what happens with that. But a lot of people that I would work with were moved over to Overwatch, I saw, and it seems like... And this also was an issue with Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone when they all were doing competitive esports, is that, okay, who does what game? What really matters? And this is what's going to be really interesting about when Riot starts to drop their games.
So I've got some interesting stuff
that
I've been hearing in the background about that.
Yeah.
They're going to be hands-off.
I've heard that with from other places, too.
They're tired. Like, it's so hard to run esports. Like, as having it, like, as a branch of your company is really challenging because there's all kinds of logistics that we've been talking about that go into it, and there's decisions that have to be made, and then you got to talk to the people above you, like, at the company, like, the CEOs and stuff, and approve it with them, and there's this all these problems. So it's so much easier, and I think, for these companies to just say, here, you have these third-party companies like ESL or something like that where you can just say, here, just take it. You know, just we know we trust you enough that we know you're going to do a good job with it. You guys take over this. And you can have a much smaller staff in your own company. You can save money that way. You're not, dumping money into it in the sense that you're, like, using esports as an advertisement more than anything else, whereas these companies are actually trying to run it, make a profit.
Well, this is one of the weird things about esports, too, because people talk about how it doesn't make money, and then that's a very difficult thing to quantify.
Right.
Like, let's say they just stopped all StarCraft to esports. Like, I don't know how many people would want to play, how many people are playing because there are these tournaments going on that they can feed off of.
Kill the game.
I think it'd be pretty bad for it, for sure. I mean, in my head, I think it would kill the game, but I'm also so kind of sucked into the center of this.
Look what happened with Heroes.
Yeah, Heroes took a big blow.
Took a big blow.
And
the weird thing
is people say at times esports doesn't make money, but again, it's difficult to quantify what the presence of these tournaments actually does in the long run for the game.
It is an advertisement. I said that in a little bit of a joking way, but it actually is, among other things, an advertisement for your game, showing that, look at this. Look at, if you play this game enough, if you get good enough at this game, you can make, X amount of dollars, you'll be famous, you'll be, you get to play video games for a living, and, what 15-year-old boy doesn't go look at that and go, ooh, I want to do that, that's where you and I came from, that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to chase being an esports, professional in some manner or another, and eventually we ended up here.
I think the fact that, for 15-year-old Tasteless, the fact that there was some kind of place where the very best people played and you could watch them was a huge motivating factor for me to devote myself to learning the game and trying to improve on it. It seems like there needs to be something like that somewhere. Just to go back for a second with the StarCraft thing.
I think it's in
a good spot. We'll just have to see, as the year goes on. I'm still pretty optimistic for StarCraft overall.
Yeah, the viewership slowly just keeps going up. Every time I watch, there's more people.
Very little bit. Yeah, it's got a very sustainable amount of viewers with almost no advertising at all. People just come and find it. But I'm more worried about Blizzard as a company, as a whole, because the one thing that I always assumed was constant when I started this was Blizzard.
Right.
Right. Mike Morhaime was a big supporter of StarCraft.
That guy loved esports.
Yeah, he loved esports. And also they were very, very good to each of their games, which was what made them different from a lot of other AAA publishers. Is usually a publisher, most other AAA publishers, it's a very linear direction the company's going in, and so all the older games are kind of falling off the back,
right?
And then it's just whatever's here in this periphery, and then that eventually gets put away. But Blizzard would basically, it's like they're planting a garden and they want to keep it alive, and that was one of the things that made them as a game company very enticing to want to get into their games, because you knew there was always an ecosystem where everything was safe. Now, that being said, I think the decision for them to give it to ESL, give WCS to them, right? We still don't know what it's called yet, but whatever it is, it's the same thing as WCS, basically.
If we say WCS, people know.
Yeah, people know. That decision was intended to keep the game healthy and in a good spot. But I just worry about Blizzard overall. I mean, them killing Heroes of the Storm was pretty fucking crazy.
That was nuts, dude.
Yeah.
And that was a crazy day here at Korea. Yeah.
Well, because people always assume that everything they do is permanent. And I think we're going to have to see what happens. I think we'll have a better idea with the release of their next few games. Does Diablo 4 do well? The cell phone thing, they seem to be in a real bind with in general.
That one's hard, man. Mobile games make so much money. You know what the most profitable game in the world is right now? PUBG Mobile. PUBG Mobile.
That's not made by...
Nope, it's Tencent.
How is that possible?
I don't know exactly how this all works.
How is it possible?
We're not allowed to, like, mention each other's games when we talk, like, when we're on broadcast.
What?
We are specifically told. Like, when I do
so
both,
when you do,
right?
PUBG Mobile, do you have to call it... Yeah. Would you be like PUBG Mobile, like
yes,
that?
Yes, you can't just call it PUBG. Yeah. You cannot just call it PUBG.
Okay.
You call it PUBG Mobile. That is exactly
really?
The name that you have to call it, 100%.
PUBG on a phone! You can't just say... Wait, is there a client on a PC for like PUBG Mobile? You know, some games you can get like the client?
Oh, I'm sure you could do that. There's like Android.
They have to play on a phone when they do that.
What
right?
do you call them? Emulators.
Yeah.
So there's like an Android emulator or something like that, and you can get PUBG on there. So you could totally play. What a lot of players do is there's like little devices you can put on your phone that have like joysticks and like pads on the top. So you're basically making your phone into a controller, and so you can play it that way.
Is that how they do it at tournaments?
No, at tournaments you're not allowed to use anything. Just
what?
The phone. Just the phone.
And is there a certain kind of phone you have to use?
They use this one, the Galaxy Note S10 Plus. So
you can't
Samsung,
use it on an iPhone?
There you go. There's an advertisement.
You can't do it on an iPhone? We'll get some counter
phone
stuff?
No, Samsung or somebody. Not Samsung has sponsored some events for it. They didn't sponsor the one I did in Saudi Arabia, which I want to talk about that a little bit sometime. But
Yeah, let's talk about that in a minute. I want to pick your brain on this.
So PUBG Mobile,
So you can't talk about the other...
Correct. I can't compare them.
To me, it would seem like that would, if you play PUBG, then, okay, when you're on the train or you're somewhere where you're not
Mobile.
Your desk, you play PUBG Mobile.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. PUBG Mobile games are great. PUBG Mobile is very, very similar.
And you cast
I cast both, yeah. They're almost, like, the guns are all the same. The maps are basically the same. Now, PUBG Mobile does have something that I find interesting that I'm kind of wondering if PUBG is going to try. More of, a Counter-Strike style system.
Were you told that at every event that you can't say PUBG?
Yes.
At every event?
Well,
every once in a while,
every PUBG Mobile event, they make it very clear because they know I'm a PUBG caster. Like, that's
kind
of...
Oh, really? Okay.
They make it very clear to me. Make sure you say PUBG Mobile.
Because sometimes I've done events where people tell me that I, like, shouldn't say... Like this or that. It's always somebody who like doesn't really have a job and they're trying to like make up like some important thing they do, which is like to try to.
Well, it's just there is PUBG Mobile and PUBG are still related in some way. Like there's still some kind of interconnection, but
yeah.
But PUBG is it used to be Bluehole, now it's a different. I can't even remember. They rebranded, and then Tencent exclusively does PUBG Mobile. They just literally took PUBG, turned it into a mobile game at first. And then as time has gone on, there's been some changes. Like they have a ton more cosmetics, for example. Like the amount of cosmetics in PUBG Mobile are out of control. Like you can actually like just like look like an Easter Bunny and other things.
do you think it deters from the game, or is it good with the cosmetics and everything?
No, I think it's fine. I mean, really serious players like on PC. The problem is on PC becomes. As a serious player, you're going to wear certain outfits that make you blend in better with the background. And what professional players actually do, there's this thing called digital vibrance that you can mess with on your screen. I think it's like a setting in NVIDIA, like graphics cards and stuff, and probably AMD as well. So you turn this vibrance up and your screen looks like you're in like Willy Wonka chocolate factory, but it lets you see contrast between certain colors easier. So it's easier to see players. So you watch, like if you watch, so like, when I do,
and that's legal in tournaments, so it looks all psychedelic.
Totally. Yeah, you're allowed to jack up.
Like
your
they licked the back of a frog in the Amazon, and now they're.
That's exactly what it looks like. Like players will be like, it's really funny. When I was doing the PKL on my own stream, people would be like, "What's with those weird color settings? Like, what's going on?" And I'm like, "No, they're showing a live what the player is seeing.
Oh,
like
wow.
This is what it looks like." And so it became a trend in Korea. to wear, we call them banana suits. They're just like this yellow, this all yellow outfit, this like Bruce Lee looking thing. And because it meshed well when the when they turned the digital vibrance up, it, that yellow was a little harder to spot. There wasn't as much contrast with it. So people started wearing that. Now, now PUBG
So everybody's trying to play with Predator Vision on?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's literally what it yellow. Is.
I did not know that.
Yeah, you cover yourself in mud too and stuff. But wow. Like, it's okay. So there's like, but on PUBG Mobile, like it doesn't matter. It's,
yeah.
It, most of the people that are playing it in third person anyway. So it's kind of, and like you can't see as far.
Yeah.
For example, in PUBG, like if you turn on the view distance, like you can see for like a kilometer.
Yeah.
Right. I think it might be even be longer than that if you put it on ultra. But I know it's at least a kilometer because like players get like kills sometimes that are like 900 meters and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But yeah, so what PUBG is doing now, actually at the PUBG Global Championship, they just made them all wear the exact same thing.
That's probably a better move.
Yeah, because then like because there was problems like there was an event, it was called the MET. It was one of the big PUBG classics. It was the only one I didn't do this year because it was done by a Thai company, and they opted to go with Thai people for their English casting, which was a disaster.
That happens sometimes.
Which was an absolute disaster, to be honest. But so I didn't get to do that one, but I was watching it, of course, from home, and people were claiming that the Korean teams were cheating because they were all wearing the same outfit. They were all wearing these yellow banana suits. Well, people didn't realize that they had already been doing this for a long time, and other regions hadn't like figured out the reason.
Oh, really? Oh, so this is one of these things where, yeah, some
so
part of the world's
figured
this out.
The Korean teams are cheating,
yeah.
But they're not. They're just, these are what they wear. Because they think it blends in the best, especially on Miramar, which is the sand map. That yellow really blends in well with most of that map. So, like, they were, you know, people just, you know, erroneously attribute this to them, you know, collaborating or whatever, colluding or whatever you want to call it.
So, let's talk about you going to Saudi Arabia. You've been to many places now.
Oh, God. I traveled so much.
Been,
I was out of
you've
Korea
been on
for,
the road.
Like, 3 months total this year.
You were out of the 3 months total? Like,
3 months
combine
total,
everything?
I
wow.
was not in Korea.
When I was interviewing Moses, I had no idea how much CSGO casters travel. Like, I knew there was always an event going on, and it seemed like every time I would go on Twitch, I would see something happening, and I'd think, oh, I must have caught...
Oh, their viewership numbers are great.
Their viewership numbers are killing it, but one of the things he was complaining about is that he's just... There's, like, no end. He just lives...
Just lives in a suitcase, right?
Yeah, he lives out of a suitcase, and he's always on the road. And
well, this is Kalaris's life too. That guy gets so much work because he's so fucking good.
This is one of the reasons why I like being out here. Yeah, he's a fucking great host. But
yes,
I need to have like periods where I'm just at home.
Yes,
I mean in this case, home being in Korea, but I need to like actually not.
Yeah, I really want to go to Evo Japan, for example, because some people I know are going. But I'm just like, I don't want to get on a plane. I just want to stay at home.
Yeah, you want
to? I'm a little burnt out.
So, which places did you go this year? You went to...
Oh, God. So, I went to...
Saudi Arabia.
Moscow. Thailand. China, like, two or three times.
China. We were in Xi'an
London,
together. Yeah,
Xi'an,
London.
Yeah, we did Xi'an together. London. There was somewhere else. Well, America for the PUBG Global Championship.
Damn.
So, I was all over the world. I literally went all the way around the world in November. I started here in Korea, went to America, then visited my friends and family around America some, and then flew to Saudi Arabia, and then Saudi Arabia back to Korea.
So
all the way around the
planet.
What
is Saudi Arabia like? Because that's one of those places where there's an event, and it's like...
So, yeah.
I would never be flying from Seoul to Saudi Arabia for fun, so what...
I got to go to a couple countries that people, like, just don't get to go to.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia just recently kind of has started to loosen up a lot of their laws and restrictions. Like, women can drive now, and they don't have to wear the full burqa anymore. They still have to wear the hijab, I think it's called, the thing on their head.
Yeah, I think it's called the hijab,
As long as their arms and legs are covered, they can. It's fine. They can show their face and other things now. So it's like they're starting to modernize or westernize, I guess would be a better way to put it.
I've heard they're banking on having tourists down the road. They're going to try
that's
to make
exactly
it a tourist hub.
Yeah.
But,
so that's
but you
why
can't, you can't drink and
you
can't
drink.
Gamble.
There's no alcohol.
And you can't. Yeah, none. Right.
None.
It's just.
It's not even like Dubai where it's like legal in the.
You got to go to a hotel, right?
Yeah. And like
you
some
pay
other
$16 for a Heineken and. You know,
yeah. Fortunately,
drunk in a hotel lobby,
which is what everybody's dream is. So, Saudi Arabia, first of all, it's like within the last year or two, they've opened it up where tourists that are like not there for religious reasons can go.
But I, as a question, then what is the thing people go there for? I mean, is there like a big?
There's a lot of cultural stuff. A lot of history there. It's beautiful in a way. Like if you've never been to a desert, and I never had. That was actually my first time in like a desert.
Oh wow! Okay.
And I found it to be quite interesting in that respect. Like I'd never seen a landscape kind of like that. Their architecture is quite interesting and beautiful.
Yeah.
The people are incredibly nice. Some of the nicest people I have ever met in my life. Like they will give you the shirt off their back, and I mean that almost literally. I had to take an Uber to go do a little sightseeing with another caster, Valdez, and we were there together. And so we wanted to go do a little sightseeing, and so we went to the desk, and there was this Saudi Arabian woman working there, very nice. And she's like, "What do you guys need? You need help?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we're trying to go to like some cultural stuff. Can you recommend something?" She's like, "Yeah, of course, of course." So she gives us a few places to go to, which ended up being weird, but I'll get into that. And so she's like, "Yeah, I'll call you guys an Uber, no problem." I'm like, "Okay, great." And then I kind of didn't process everything, and like two minutes later,
because that would mean she's paying for the Uber, right?
Yeah, 2 minutes later, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I don't have any cash. Like, can I get you the money?" And she's like, "No. Here, you could just pay for the Uber with cash." And she gives me like $15 in Saudi Arabian cash. And I'm just like, "Can I pay you back?" Like, no. She's like, "No. It's fine. Don't worry about it." And I'm like, "No.
Damn,
like,
that's baller."
I know. It was super nice.
Wow.
And everybody, like the Saudi Arabian casters, were just some of the nicest dudes. They were buying us like donuts and pizza and stuff. And everybody there was going out of their way to show you a good time. Because I think they really, their government is like kind of pushing this idea of it being a tourist place.
Not only that,
place.
I think they probably just don't get that many.
They all speak English too.
Tourists,
like everybody.
Really? Isn't it weird what places people speak English and what places people don't speak English?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem to ever be in line with education rates or.
It's not.
Or anything like that. You know, it's. You can meet homeless people in the Philippines, or English is fine. You know, it's. But other places you go, no. You go
it's
to Japan,
weird.
It's very difficult
Japan,
to find people.
Yeah, not
that
many
speak
people
English.
Speak English in Japan, which is why I'm like glad I learned Japanese. I studied Japanese for like a year. I can at least get by when I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I wanted to go there, which is why I studied it. But now like I now that I live so close, it's like a 2-hour flight, right?
Right.
From here
very
to Japan.
Close.
And I love going there. It's a beautiful country. And the food's amazing and everything's great there. But yeah, Saudi Arabia, so outside of the people being incredibly nice, it was dusty. Like, because there's sand everywhere. The inside of our event, our venue, was just filled with dust.
Really?
I mean, you could see it. I have pictures. I'll show you. You could just see the dust in the air. And I could taste it on my, like, lips, in my mouth.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's almost like, because I was at the beach for Christmas. But, yeah, you can just get sand and everything.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And then, like, our PGMs, our monitors, where we have the game and stuff, will get dusty. We had to periodically wipe them off. Because they were getting so much dust or sand, essentially, from the air on top of them. And so, like, it's pretty funny. I told one of the Saudi casters, I'm like, they really need to, like, close the doors. Because they had these huge, like, garage doors that you could, like, fit a truck in, right? Because this venue is, like, this is another interesting thing about Saudi Arabia is they told me once this event was done, they were destroying this building and then rebuilding it. This is, like, how they kind of keep their economy moving.
I think that this is something China seems to do.
China does it
as well, where they're just constantly
you're just building
under
it's
construction.
An Asian thing too, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't quite understand the economics of it, but it seems to be something that
gives people jobs. I guess
gives people jobs because I know we did WCG. That building had just been built; like they got the electricity plugged in there the day before, and they might tear it down again or something.
Right. So, like, while I was there, they were constantly doing work on this building. So they had these huge garage door open that were open and. Trucks and people and stuff were coming in and out quite often, and sand was coming in because of this. And so I said to one of the Saudi casters, I'm like, they really need to close these doors. Like, the dust is horrible in here. He's like, no, we open them so it gets better. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, no, that's not how this works. Like, if you've ever been in a city that has, like, a pollution problem, kind of like Seoul does.
Yeah. No, that's the opposite mentality. We need to always be indoors with
even
air
if you
purifiers.
Don't have an air purifier. Even if you don't have an air purifier, it's much better indoors. Yeah. So I was just kind of like, all right.
Do you know, is there going to be other events in other places that I guess people like you and me might deem more obscure or unexpected for gaming?
Oh,
because when I was in Thailand for the holidays, I saw PUBG Mobile all over the place.
It's everywhere.
It's just
Southeast Asia
everywhere.
And India, it's huge.
Yeah. I've heard it's growing in Africa. I mean, is there going to be a chance that you're going to be going to more regions like that? Because, you know, people talk shit on phones, and they're kind of right in that people are always looking at their phones. They're always staring down. It can be really antisocial if you're in a restaurant and everybody's looking at their phones. But, you know, if you got like, if you have like a really garbage job, like you're a guy that sits, you know, in floor one of a building, you're like a door guy or something, you basically just sit there all day in case something happens. A phone is like the greatest thing ever. Like, I had so many just terrible jobs as a kid. Like, I worked in a candy store that almost nobody came into, but I wasn't allowed to, like, use a laptop or read a book, so I kind of, like, stood there and...
Did nothing
and was, like, trapped in my own thoughts all day. But if I had a phone, it would have made it much better. But, you know, most people who are out... excuse me. Most people who are out at their jobs, and there's a lot of just downtime, it seems like having a game to play on your phone is the greatest... savior of your time, and it gives you something to do, something to compete in.
I didn't expect it to become as big as it has, if that makes sense.
Is the esports thing a little bit artificial, or is there,
no.
You think there's a real drive for competition?
No, there's a huge
drive. Are there like do not fuck around cell phone guys mm-hmm. showing up to this?
100%. I mean, the PUBG Mobile players, like, their game is more popular, like, in terms of not just people who play it, but also viewership.
Yeah.
PUBG Mobile has great viewership, especially in like Southeast Asia and that area. It's huge there. China, it's huge.
But this makes sense, though. I mean, if you don't, not everybody has a desktop or a 4K TV that they can just plug a console into and play a game. But at this point in time, it seems like everybody does need a smartphone.
You have to.
And so,
and they're cheap. They're cheap computers, right? People don't think about this. These are computers. These things are computers. That's literally what these are. And so you can do anything you can do on a computer, basically.
Like, what? No, this guy just sold me on cell phones. They're what?
No, like, they're computers in your pocket, right? They have everything. They have graphics cards. They have, you know, CPUs. They have everything. And so why not? Why wouldn't they? Like, I never occurred, of course, because we're like,
no,
we
grew doesn't
up
occur
with
me,
this
yeah.
stuff. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah. And then I started playing
for other
Clash
people,
Royale.
It's just a porn machine that makes phone calls. But you're right. Yeah.
But when I started playing Clash Royale like years ago, it's when I kind of thought, okay, maybe there's something here. Like,
yeah, I had this with Hearthstone where I went, oh, actually, now I can play something competitive. Like, while I'm on the train going to cast GSL, I actually can. There's a way I can really engage somebody and compete while doing something totally outdoors. Okay, here's a question then. You've seen, you know, the Stadia? Stadia? Do you know what Stadia? I called it the Stadia.
I don't know what this is.
It's Google. It was making like a console, but it's not a console. It streams onto any device. So like a monitor.
Oh, kind of like a Chromecast kind of thing?
Yeah, it'd be like Chromecast, but for a game.
Oh.
And in one of the big cells. Now, apparently the thing's doing terribly, but I think it's because of the technology to get the thing to stream onto a game from somewhere else to stream onto like your laptop or just a screen or your phone. It's not quite there yet, but presumably we will have that technology in a couple of years. Is that going to make cell phone games obsolete because we'll just be able to play like if I take my phone here, right? So I got my phone. Let's say I can play any game that I could normally play on a controller. Like, let's say it's Halo. This is probably a better example. But, but instead of having to get a cell phone game that I get in the App Store, I just turn this on and I'm playing Halo here. Is that going to make games like PUBG Mobile obsolete because we can just get...
I don't know. Maybe.
This might be the new thing that...
This is something I actually didn't know about.
Yeah, I knew very little about it. Maybe the last 2 weeks I've learned some stuff about it. I try not to keep up too much with some technology stuff because a lot of times it turns out to not happen or not be the case.
Right.
So you never know, you know, what direction.
I'm still curious about this VR thing.
Yeah, I don't
There's
know.
There's some VR esports stuff that's cropping up now, and I'm really curious
about
that.
I'm very suspicious about that. I would be curious to see how it goes, but VR... I guess we'll have to see when the Half-Life VR game comes out. That'll be the first big budget. I'm going to get that shit.
I'm going to get that. 100%.
I'm going to get that.
Are you kidding? Like,
I want to see what that's all about.
That looks super fun.
But is there a possibility that like we have a situation where people are making games designed for very, very tiny screens that can then just be played everywhere?
100%. I mean, and mobile games are the most profitable games. You make a mobile game, you make a killing. This is why Blizzard and other companies want to get into this market, because it's nuts. They make money. And they don't even have to try. Like I give Clash Royale $5 a month to play their stupid game, because and I don't have to. It's
but
free.
Don't some of these games don't they make money in part because of degenerate behavior? Right. I mean, this is no seriously. Like some of these games are geared towards people with problems with their fucking brain, and they just spend all their money on stupid shit that like fucking. Yes. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I am that person sometimes. I mean, I buy cosmetics.
Yeah, I mean, I buy that
stuff.
Shit sometimes too. But like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. Well, there are people who spend like all their earned money on these things. Like they're called whales, right?
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
You just spend
or fucking
all
morons.
This.
Yeah, but whatever. But they just spend all their money like to get all the hats and a game. I mean,
there's like, so this is funny. I have a story about this. Yeah. When I was in Saudi Arabia, I was talking to the Saudi casters and like, so
I bet they had all the shit, right?
A couple of like the rich Saudi people they know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're princes or not, but there's so many princes actually. It's like kind of weird.
It's not even cool.
But they were saying that their friend had two PUBG Mobile accounts that had every single cosmetic unlocked.
Damn.
Now, how much do you think it would cost you to unlock every single cosmetic in PUBG Mobile?
So this is, you want me to actually guess?
I want
this?
You to guess.
Every single cosmetic?
Every single one.
$100,000?
More.
Really?
$250,000.
A quarter of a million.
Ish. Is what I was told. I don't know. I can't verify that.
Damn.
This is what I was told. So this dude dropped $500,000 on this game.
Damn.
Just so he could have
this
everything.
This is why my opinion is not that important. Wow.
Isn't that wild? I mean, this is how these games make money, right? And then there's us. There's people like me. I spend $5 a month to get the Clash Royale League Pass because it's like got some nice benefits to it. It's actually worth it to me.
Yeah.
And I obviously I cast the game too, but
right.
You could just degenerates just sit there and just throw money at these things.
So is that I mean, I don't know what the answer is. Is that good because it gives them so much money they can try to fund their esports, or is that bad because it sullies the game or you know, some of these people that spend money on this are not. Now, I'm actually not really in the business of trying to like protect people from themselves and stuff, but
I guess
the argument would probably be better if it's a pay to win model.
Right.
Any game that's pay to win is essentially problematic, right? Because it's no longer really a game. It's like,
and PUBG Mobile, there's
none
of that.
I don't know what it is.
I mean, that's the cool thing about something like PUBG Mobile. There's none of that, really. It's all just cosmetic.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. I get that there are people who have like obsessive behaviors and because of that are going to spend too much money or like steal their parents' credit card and buy like hundreds of dollars of stuff in it, which is of course problematic, but at the same time, like, it's good. I think it's good for esports because they're trying, and they're like, the mobile games are becoming more and more popular because the phones are cheaper, right? These computers are cheaper than a computer that you put on your desk. Like the price it costs to get a computer that can run PUBG really well is high. And the cost that can get a phone that can run PUBG Mobile is not. You can get PUBG Mobile to run. I got it to run on my Samsung Galaxy 5, which is like,
it's
which
pretty
is
old,
like
right?
An old phone,
yeah.
And it worked just fine.
Damn. Well, what do you think is going to be next for phone games? Then is there? Because I'll be honest, I think most people would agree with me that first person shooters is not exactly the most ideal vehicle for this. Is there a You know, we've seen, for instance, auto chess games get really big, and that kind of came out of nowhere. CCGs are still obviously big. People are trying to push into new ones. It seems like Hearthstone, if you want to talk about a game, I think I've spent a lot of money in the past playing.
I know you have.
I was a whale in that game. I spent a lot of money on cards in that, but it seems like that might be declining slightly. So obviously card games have done well on phones. Auto chess seems to be doing fine. PUBG Mobile does very, very well.
Extremely well.
Which is very impressive because I think a lot of people didn't think that would be good. It also gives some hope for games like Diablo Immortal, maybe that actually is really playable on a phone.
Yeah,
I think it probably will be.
I think it'll be fine.
I think it's just that PC gamers, I think logically, would be disgusted by a PC game company making a phone game, especially for a big franchise like Diablo.
Yeah.
Let me digress there.
Sure.
What I was trying to get at is there like a type of game that can be made on phone that could be the next big thing?
I can't think of anything that couldn't at this point.
Really?
I'm convinced that anything you could do on a computer, you can do on a phone.
Fighting
You'll
game.
Find
can
a
you
way.
Do a fighting game?
Hell yeah. There are fighting games on phones.
Are they good?
Yeah. We're like, we're surrounded by fighting game nerds. Fighting game I'm like, guys, like, you tell me, is it any good? Like, I've seen them. I think there's potential where it could be good. I mean, I guess those especially screens if you have are really could... sensitive, so you could have like six buttons, you know, no problem. And like Gerald's like cringing in the back. I would do it. I'd try it.
Oh, I mean, I'll try it. Yeah, I'll try any game. It's not a bad idea.
I don't think there's any limits anymore. Now that you can do first person shooters on phones really relatively well.
Before we close up, what about VR? Is that going to be... Can you have a competitive VR game?
I want it
Can
to
you
be.
Get a VR headset that doesn't make everybody sick?
Yeah, they have those
They
now.
Have those now?
Yeah.
Because I tried some of the old ones and I was...
We could go down, to a VR room here in Korea and try them.
No, I tried one. It was an old VR room.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know. The head. It was...
Was it bad? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was bad. That's why I've
heard the new ones are fine.
Really?
Like, I want to play, like, personally, I want to do, like, flight sims or, like, X-Wing stuff. Like,
You want to cast in VR. I want to see Clinton, the VR caster. You're fucking flying through the game. You got your wands and shit, and you're fucking zooming around like Superman.
That would be pretty
That'd be cool.
That would be pretty cool. Like, and you have like a virtual caster desk, and you're sitting there, and you like look over, and there's like
I'm on one of those treadmills that moves any direction. I got my gloves on and stuff. I'm in StarCraft battle happening all around me.
They did a VR tournament here. I think it was Spoke TV or VSPN. I can't remember which one, but they did.
My hand is not going to this camera shot, is it? Are we okay?
You okay?
Okay, we're good. All right. I just realized I've had my hand out the whole time.
No,
yeah.
So there was...
I have to draw a Clinton puppet on my hand and make it talk like this. And like, sorry, go ahead.
I'm pushing your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a VR tournament for... It's like a real-time strategy game for VR. So like,
oh, they had that at
WCG. And you're like picking up stuff and like doing stuff.
Yeah.
I don't fully understand it, but I watched it and I was like, huh, that's kind of cool. Like, I kind of want to do that. And then like I've seen like the realistic like first-person shooters in VR and they look super fun. I mean, they're... It's almost too much though. Like when I watch it and I think about having that VR set in my head and then I get shot, like that's almost like jarring. Like I'm like, ooh.
I want to play a survival horror game on VR.
Oh God. You're crazy.
I think because survival horror games are the one
I can't
game where
shit.
when I beat it as you know, single player, I really feel like I've overcome something. Unless it's like Dark Souls, but that's like a challenge, you know. But like when I'm like, ooh, okay, I got out of there in one piece. That'd be cool. We are actually at a little bit over an hour.
Okay.
Thank you for doing...
Of course. My pleasure.
...the first video episode.
My pleasure.
Thanks
for
everybody.
Having me, man.
We're going to go to the after show.
This is cool. This is great.
Yeah, this was
a
great.
Nice setup. This table is, like, sick, actually.
Yeah, this is really cool. So thank you so much for doing this. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We're going to go to the after show now for Patreon-only supporters.
This is where you get the juicy stuff.
That's right. That's a wrap. Thanks for watching, everybody. This is the first of many. I will be going home now, packing my bags, and getting ready to go to Tokyo for Evo. Again, if you want to support us, patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. A little bit of money from you goes a long way for us in producing this show. This podcast was produced by State and Core A Studios. Artwork by Alaris. Music by Mark Lentz. Special thanks to our top Patreon supporters, Seth N., Rohit Sambadi, John Kernicki, and Charlie Sheever.